Ramacharya Sakwati Jai, comes to the hall, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Gaurabhakta Vindhiki Jai, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gova, Govada Sama, Hanurada Gada Giri Govardhani Jai, Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Navadab Dham Ki Jai, Gaurishwana Tosi Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Anana Koti Vaishra Vrindhiki Jai, Samavetta Bhakta Vrindhiki Jai, Gopremendi, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru, Sri Guranga, all glories to Sri Prabhu. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Sai Buddhadeva Chimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Prasarane Nirvishesha Shrinivasa Bhaskaratesha Charane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Saraswati Gaurabhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Read the Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 15 verse 3. Yata prayana sanyanti
Yata prayana sanyanti
Shoto vegena balaka
Shoto vegena balaka
Samyujyan devi yujyante
Samyujyan devi
Takalena sometimes come together and sometimes separate by the parts of time. But the misunderstanding of the conditioned soul is the bodily conception of life. The body is material, but within the body is the soul. This is spiritual understanding. Unfortunately, one who is in ignorance, under the spell of material illusion, accepts the body to be the self. He cannot understand that the body is matter. Like small particles of sand, bodies come together and are separated by the parts of time, and people falsely lament for unification and separation. Unless one knows this, there is no question of happiness. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, this is the first instruction given by the Lord. As the embodied soul continually passes in this body from boyhood to youth to old age, the soul similarly passes into another body at death. The self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. We are not the body. We are spiritual beings trapped in the body. Our real interest lies in understanding this simple fact. And we can make further spiritual progress. Otherwise, if we remain in the bodily conception of life, our miserable material existence will continue forever. Political adjustments, social welfare work, medical assistance, and other programs we have manufactured for peace and happiness will never endure. We shall have to undergo the sufferings of material life one after another. Therefore, material life is said to be dukkhalayama sasvatam, this reservoir of miserable conditions. Translation, O King, as small particles of sand sometimes come together, sometimes separated due to the force of the waves, the living entities who have accepted material bodies sometimes come together and are sometimes separated by the force of time. So this is quite a common instruction we find in the Bhagavatam. Another example is given of things floating in the water. They come together and then they separate or whatever in the water, two objects. So the idea here is that we have temporary relationships. There are different types of relationships. One is the Atma's relationship with the body. So we get one body, and then at death we separate from the body. Then we get another body in the future, and then we separate from that body. So that's one type of arrangement. It may look haphazardous. Because sometimes we're born in animal, sometimes in human body, sometimes in devata body. But it's according to the law of karma that we get these bodies. However, we don't understand that, so we simply go wandering from one body to another, looks like in a haphazard manner. But there is a law behind this. That is one type of separation in union. But we're not even aware of that. Because usually people are not aware, they're taking from one body to the next. The other separation is within life itself, where we meet people and we separate from people. We develop attachments to people and then they disappear and then we lament. So that is, of course, the case here with Chitraketu and his son. They had a meeting for some time and then the son died and they were separated. So that is the cause of lamentation. And for this reason, Narada and Angira came to Chitraketu to give him instructions. So this is a very elementary instruction that inevitably there's going to be meeting and separations. And the meetings will lead to attachment and the separation will lead to lamentation. So this keeps happening in the material world. Again, it looks like chance. You meet people, separate from people, etc. You have a good son or a bad son born to you, and then the son may die or whatever. So it all looks like chance again. Again, we have the law of karma giving us certain results and certain meetings, etc., and certain separations. But it looks very haphazard again. And for this reason, the queen was criticizing the Lord, why do you make it in such a way that the son dies before the parents? When the natural procedure should be that the son lives longer than the parents. So you cause us lamentation by having our son die early. Of course, the opposite is the son lives longer, then he has to lament for the parents. So in either case, there's lamentation. So there's no getting around that problem of meeting and separation. Somewhere along the line, somebody has to get meeting and separation. So this is a problem inherent in the material world because the jivas who are eternal keep getting bodies and then giving up bodies. So because of this, there is lamentation forced upon us. So this is one situation that one must accept in the material world. So what is the solution? Solutions become the task and simply say, oh yes, we meet and we separate and whatever, so we should become impervious to all these things. Don't become too attached to anybody because you're going to have to separate from them sooner or later. So this Krishna also teaches this in Bhagavad Gita.
become indifferent to the happinesses and distresses of the material and tolerate everything. Happiness and distress, heat and cold, etc. Tolerate everything in the material world. To tolerate requires detachment. We have to become detached from other people and other things. We have to be detached from our own material body. As a practice, this becomes vairagya. We are taught to develop vairagya through this an anga of jnana. So we practice different austerities, etc., to become detached from material sensations, material objects, etc. So this is quite well known in the Vedic literatures. We have many types of austerities and vratas and stuff that people are recommended to do to develop this detachment from material energy. And the reason is that by attachment to objects, then we develop lamentation. So to avoid that, we become detached. So that is one approach. Simply tolerate everything in the material world, become detached from it. But then the thinking person will say, well, how do we become detached? And why should we become detached from everything? So of course the answer is because you're suffering, you don't like suffering, just become detached. But then it's attachment that gives us happiness in the material world. So we have to give the happiness also. If you want to give up the lamentation, we also have to give up the happiness. This way we become detached from happiness and distress. So we don't develop any attachments. So not many people are willing to make that sacrifice. Why do I want to give up my happiness? So the answer, of course, is because you have lamentation. You don't like the lamentation. Therefore, you should give up the happiness and the lamentation. So most people won't be attracted to that. It's very difficult for people to accept that. So then behind this, there's a little philosophy. Okay, you're not the body at all anyway, so then why be attached to anything that's related to your material body? So then we have the idea that you're not the body, you're the soul. So give a philosophical basis by which you can justify being detached from everything. Okay? And this leads to jnana, the differentiation of self from others and seeing everything equally in the material world, etc. Unfortunately, the process of jnana is a little difficult for people also. Even we have a rational reason based on faith that scriptures do exist and they're telling us that you're not the body or the atma, still there's a little difficulty there for people to just accept knowledge and then based on knowledge to do things. Most people don't operate like that. They don't work on the basis of knowledge. They work on the basis of feeling. That's rajagun, tamagun. If one is sattvic, yes, one can accept knowledge and based on knowledge one can do things. That's sattva, jnana and sattva. And a person in sattva can accept that knowledge and practice and do vairagya, develop detachment from everything. Sattva guna. So it's not for everybody. Only for those in sattva guna we can give them this reason and develop detachment. So basically, the arguments of become detached, tolerate everything, understanding the spirit soul, this is for more advanced people than people in Rajagun and Tamagun. They can't do that at all. That is why in Bhagavad Gita, after first telling Krishna Arjuna this, then Krishna goes back and reverts to karma yoga. Oh, you cannot do this, you do karma yoga instead. So it's not so much philosophical as engagement. But it's a trick by which you develop vairagya by giving some limitation to your activities. So rules and regulations are there to control your senses to some degree. So it's also vairagya, but it is a limited vairagya, we can say. The lure is that you also get your happiness. Because if you follow the rules, then you get svargaloka, you get nice material benefits, etc. So the lure is there that you'll also be materially happy. It's not like, yeah, okay, no material happiness, give it up. So it tempts you with material happiness. And in the process, it develops your restriction of the senses. Those are clever means. Of course, it is duplicitous in one sense. So the example is given of Bhagavan, it's like a small child, so you give them a piece of candy. If you drink the medicine, then you get the candy. So we lure them with all sorts of things in order to fulfill our other objective of giving them medicine so that they can become well. So we give them a piece of candy. So all these temptations of material happiness are like that. They're all temporary, and again, they're going to lead to suffering. But those are given so that the people will follow the injunctions, at least. Yeah. And true, they do get the Svarga Loka or whatever if they follow properly. So they do get some reward materially. But it's dangerous also, because due to those rewards, we become materially attached again, and we never progress beyond the stage of doing karmas and getting material enjoyment. And in fact, there's a whole justification for this, the karma mimamsa philosophy. Don't go beyond this. Just do this. Follow your varnashramic duties and your sacrifices and worship the devatas and whatever, and then you can be happy forever. You can stay at a certain level of sattva guna in the material world, and you can enjoy forever. Go to Svargaloka and come down, go up to Svargaloka and come down again like this. Don't worry about God, don't worry about anything. Just use the law of karma for your benefit. That's all. So this becomes misleading. And therefore this type of philosophy is completely rejected in the Bhagavatam as a cheating philosophy. Karma Mimamsa philosophy. It keeps you in the material world. So of course, that is for the less advanced people, and it has some advantage of restricting them, but then we fall into this trap of getting caught with material desires. So it's a gradual process, particularly one should, it has its place, and therefore even Shankaracharya would say, yes, you do through this whole karma kanda, and then you go from that. When you've exhausted your desires to some degree, then you go to jnana after that. Raise yourself up, and then come to sattva-guna, and then do jnana. So it's a process of gradually raising yourself up, if it's done properly, and you don't get materially attached. However, this is all condemned by Narada Muni. And he tells Veda Vyasa, this is not a good system to follow in Kali Yuga, because people will not advance. They'll simply become more attached. They get stuck on the material enjoyment. So then what's the solution? Everybody should do jnana? No, they can't, because they're not qualified. The people in Kali Yuga are more degraded than ever. So they can never jump up to sattva-guna from tamo-guna. Very, very difficult. So what do they do? So therefore, the alternative is take to the process of bhakti. So in the, the Chapter Sloki, the four essential verses of Bhagavata mentioned in the second canto, there it says that this process is the process which is done at all places, at all times. Sarvatra, sarvada. It is applicable at all times, that is, youth, middle age, old age, or whatever, past, present, future, beginning of the kalpa to the end of the kalpa, from the beginning of Brahma's life when he practiced bhakti up to the end, or whatever. So all times for all people. And of course, summer, winter, and any time of year, any time of day also is okay. It can be done. There's no restrictions. And all places. That means from Patalaloka to Satyaloka, and within our Bhumandala and all the different dvipas and all the different varshas, bhakti process goes on. And within Varsha in all places, that is, in the all the different countries there, whichever country in the world is there, and among all peoples. So Brahmins can do it, Sudras can do it, Chandalas can do it, Mulachas can do it, Nishadas can do it, etc. Unras and Kiratas and Andras and whatever. All types of people can do it. So applicable everywhere to all people. That is the process of bhakti. So therefore it goes beyond Varna and Ashrama. Anyone can practice. It goes beyond gunas, Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattvagun. Anyone can practice. So therefore, this is the process which is recommended in Kali Yuga, not the process of Karma Yoga advancing up to Jnana Yoga or whatever, and then solving your problems. So if you want to solve the problem of lamentation in the material world, though this is not the goal of bhakti actually, bhakti will solve the problem. It is a secondary effect of bhakti. So sometimes in the Bhagavatam and in Bhagavad Gita, it'll say that the result of bhakti is it destroys all your karmas, it destroys your lamentation, it destroys fear of death. Yes, it does that. It's not the goal, but it happens anyway. So what happens is a byproduct, easily. We don't have to put effort into it. If you want to solve your problems through karma yoga, you have to put effort into it. You have to do certain activities very properly. And you may or may not get the result, depending on how perfectly you do it. If there's some fault involved, then you may not get the result. And so that is the problem of trying to be happy in that way. If you do jnana, of course, it involves vairagya. It involves great endeavor in jnana to develop that detachment from the material world and become happy. So it's again, endeavor. And same with yoga. Endeavor. So that bhakti process is said to be easy and quicker. Because all of these things happen without endeavoring for them. Our only endeavor is to please the Lord. And as a result, we get freedom from lamentation and birth and death and all these other things. It happens. But it's not, and there's no endeavor put for that. So that is why the process of bhakti is recommended. So this is the theme throughout the Bhagavatam ultimately. And though we have these teachings here, these are not the ultimate teachings. They are favorable for bhakti, but in themselves, they constitute jnana. Become detached from the material world. Understand you're not the material body. Yeah. In itself, it is only up to the level of jnana. But it is also useful for devotion, because if we're too attached to our body, then we also cannot advance spiritually. So, therefore, the instructions on the jnana type instructions we find here are also essential for the jivas to perform bhakti. But at the same time, we should understand these are not the highest instructions. So therefore, we should understand the difference between the body and the jiva. But we should also understand the difference between the jiva and the Supreme Lord. So if we don't go that far, then we've only got to the level of jnana. So we also have to understand the existence of the Supreme Lord. Then we can practice bhakti. And then we can use that process of bhakti. And in that process, we can solve this problem of lamentation in the material world. So, as a first step, for people who are lamenting, they don't like the lamentation, therefore these type of instructions are given. Okay, you're not the body, become detached, etc. Yes. So the whole question is how to become detached. So ultimately, the process is not jnana or just simply philosophical contemplation, but the process to do that is bhakti, worship of the Supreme Lord. So therefore, that's how we should take these instructions. They're part of a larger instruction, that is to understand the existence of the Supreme Lord. Knowledge. And knowledge means the ability to discriminate between body and soul. They are not the body. So that is manifested naturally in sattva guna. The other quality is called contentment. But that doesn't mean material. You're satisfied with all enjoying in the material world. It means we're satisfied without enjoying. In other words, we're detached from material enjoyment and we're satisfied with taking minimum in the material world, and we have internal happiness from the Atma. So that is the qualification for sattva guna, and therefore very favorable for developing jnana. I'm not the body, I'm the soul, etc. And therefore you can do the vairagya and all this philosophical investigation. If one is in Rajagun or Tamagun, then we have different qualities manifesting. That means that the soul is not really manifesting any influence. In Sattvagun, we can see the soul has got some influence there, and therefore we can realize the soul. And the attachment to the material world is less, etc. In Rajagun and Tamagun, there's great attachment to material identity and consequently material objects. So therefore, it is very unfavorable to develop the idea, I'm not the body, I should renounce everything. People want to enjoy the material world. So this is their main motive. So it is difficult for these people to develop a philosophical inclination and understand I'm not the body and I should become detached from everything. So their feelings are involved in all of this because they're attached to their body. So what is the body good for? Feeling things, our views or senses. This is nice, this is not nice. And so they're attached to that. They're attached to the good part of it, not the bad part of it. So the good feelings that we get from the eye, the ear, the nose, etc. So they get attachment to these things and experience it through the basis of feeling. Okay? So they don't, if you give them a rational explanation why they shouldn't do it, they can't accept it because their concept of good and bad is based upon I like and I don't like. This is good, I enjoy this or I don't enjoy this. In Sattvagun, not like that because one is detached, so therefore one can accept a philosophical proposal. You're not the body, you're the soul. Because of this, 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 and this reason. Okay, they can think about it and accept it, but you can't do that when you're too attached to the material body. You're guided by your likes and dislikes, etc. Very easy. It is difficult in the sense that because it's the highest of the three gunas, to stay in that position is difficult. So it's always the possibility you degrade. So therefore there's a constant effort made to stay in sattva once you're there. And therefore you have to follow all the rules and regulations in the varnashram system as a brahmana. And if you don't follow them, suddenly you start falling down. So the nature of the material world is two things. One is ultimately destruction, which means tamagun. Everything gets destroyed at the end of the day of Brahma. Everything gets destroyed at the end of the life of Brahma. Everything gets destroyed at the end of your life. Your body dies. So there's a general tendency for going back to tamagun. Everything gets created, everything gets destroyed. So there's a period of sattva in the middle where you're maintained and then you go down again, you go to tamagun again. So in the material world, sometimes rajagun is prominent, sometimes sattvagun is prominent, sometimes tamagun is prominent. So in satyayuga, sattvagun is prominent. In kali yuga, tamagun is prominent. And within this, then we get up and down, sattvagun, up and down also, but it's prominently up in sattva. In kali yuga, it's the opposite. Everything tamagun is periodically little sattva, little rajagun. So it's according to time, and it goes from sattva to tama, satyayuga, kali yuga, like this. And then we get up to satyayuga, then it falls down again to tama, kali yuga again. So we get these cycles of manifestation of sattva, rajas, tamas continually. Well, yeah, in every age, there's a predominance of different guna. That doesn't mean there's no hope, or there's no sattva guna, or there's no transcendental life going on. There is, but the gunas are still prominent among the population at large. But the thing is that in spite of the gunas, bhakti can go on in any case, whether it's sattva guna or tamo guna. In one sense, sattva guna is favorable, but it's also dangerous. So therefore, that David does pray to be born on earth rather than in heavenly planets to practice bhakti because it is too enjoyable up there. The sattva is too enjoyable and they have no motive for going further. So sattva-guna also has its drawbacks. So in other words, the whole material world essentially has got problems. Whether you're in Satya Yuga or Kali Yuga, whether it's sattva-guna or tamaguna or rajaguna, there are problems attached to it, whatever. But of the three, sattva-guna is favorable for spiritual life more than tamaguna, definitely. But it has its minus points also. Prominence. Everything is everywhere in the material universe, but it's a matter of prominence. So in a Brahman, he's not completely sattvic. He's got a mixture of gunas, but sattva is prominent. So he's called brahminical. As I said, it's favorable, but they need association. They don't get that association, they go the other direction, and they go and get a Gyani influence, and they become Gyanis. Because, as I said, the sattva mode is favorable for realization of Atma and Brahman. I'm not the body. So you can go into Jnana instead of Bhakti also at that stage. Definitely a person in sattva guna will generally become somewhat spiritual. But he may go impersonal rather than impersonal, depending on his association. Why Krishna gunas? Because people like to enjoy in different ways. People like enjoyment. So therefore they get a material body and they enjoy. But people like to enjoy differently because they're all individuals. So they get different types of enjoyment. But then you get different karmas for them. And if you have tamaguna enjoyment, then you get bad, real bad karmas. If you like sattva-guna enjoyment, then you get good karmas. Enjoying that way. But nevertheless, it's based on the idea I want to enjoy for myself. And therefore, we enjoy in these three mixtures, three types. Well, that's a type of statement made, and consequently when you die you take sannyas, you get liberated suddenly. So there is a procedure like that. The person is dying and they give him sannyas. When he's dying, so I'm free, you get liberation. Of course that's artificial. Just like taking the upanayanam the day before you get married or something like that. Just to be follow the samskara, you take the upanayanam at the same time you're getting married. It's bona fide, whatever like that. So it's like a symbol, so to speak. Because a person in sannyasa is supposed to be more detached from material energy. Okay, it's on the way to liberation to some degree. But it's all material designation again. It's all varnashramic material designation. And we're not judging a person based on detachment. We're judging a person in Vaishnava culture based on attachment to Krishna. No, there's many reasons. Many reasons. It can be aparad, it can be inattention, it can be the most material nature. We can't say it's actually karma as such, because it's not a karma, may be an influence of certain circumstances due to vasanas from previous lifetime, desires from previous lifetime. But we can't say that karma makes you do something or this or that, whatever. No, it's our own decision ultimately. But that doing sinful activities or falling or whatever, or for anyone, not just a guru or a sannyasi, but for anyone, it's a matter of, for a devotee that is, there are several influences. One is offenses, one is, of course, artificial standards,
they're not qualified, and they're put in that position. Could another's inattention, whatever. Another could be previous vasanas, like that. So there's many, many things. Of course, one other thing is, if one takes unqualified disciples who ultimately don't practice bhakti and instead do offensive or sinful activity, that can influence the status of the guru also. So it says if the guru does not reject that disciple, they both go to hell. The disciple can drag the guru to hell by his sinful activities also. So there's that thing. But it's not just, so absolute, because obviously it's not dependent on one person or whatever that the guru has to suffer or whatever, but he has to share some of that bad karma, so to speak, unless he breaks the relationship.
Practically we see that before coming to bhakti we gain so much knowledge about bhakti, but many times we hear that bhakti is independent of knowledge. How it is?
Well, because this knowledge that we call bhakti is not knowledge in the other sense of jnana. So, the Bhagavad Gana, or the knowledge we get about bhakti and the Supreme Lord from Scripture, that's not Gana in the normal sense that we're talking of condemning Gana, impersonal Gana. Yeah? So that Gana that we condemn is simply that the philosophical Gana as represented by Brahma Sutras, etc., where we investigate and meditate upon and not the body, etc., and then we study the Upanishads, etc., I am Brahman, etc., that type of Gana. To develop detachment. The vairagya is an anga of that jnana. So, bhakti is independent of that. But it doesn't mean we don't think. So there is knowledge in bhakti also. The sravanam process is gathering knowledge. So it's not that the devotee is ignorant. So he has to have some bandha jnana. He has to know what the abhidhyaya is. He has to know the prayojana. All this is represented in scripture. So scriptural knowledge is also essential for faith and for the development of bhakti.
So this type of jnana will slowly lead to bhakti?
Which?
Sambandha jnana vidhyayana.
Not slowly, quickly. If we don't have it, it's a slow process. It's called bhakti abhas. With it, then we can develop quickly. It's essential. That's why we have scriptures. And so our bhakti is based on scripture, which means knowledge. That knowledge you must take. The jnana we don't accept is the other jnana cultivating impersonalism and merging into Brahman. That's the jnana we don't go for. Some people will argue that jnana is the process and bhakti is an anga of jnana. So bhakti is only used to develop our detachment and then merge in Brahman. So that we don't accept. So to accept independence of jnana, independent of bhakti, is not proper. In fact, to get liberation, it cannot be done independently of bhakti. Jnana also is dependent on bhakti. Karma also is dependent on bhakti. The results of karma are only because they also worship Vishnu. If they refuse to worship Vishnu, they don't even get to Svargaloka. So even karma is not effective if there's no devotion, even if it's a little devotion. And the same with jnana. If they don't accept the Supreme Lord and worship and then they offend him, then they fall from their position. So jnana is dependent on bhakti, bhakti is independent of jnana.
Though we say that the soul is different from the body, we cannot identify. But whatever happens to the body is realized by the soul, and immediately the consciousness acts up. And how do we get detached from that sort of reaction?
Well, why are we attached? We're attached because we experience pleasure and pain in relation to our own body. And the reason we do that is because we have ahankara. We're identifying with that body. And the reason we identify with the body is because we want our own enjoyment. So, the only way we get rid of that idea is to put Krishna as the center of enjoyment. You're not the center of enjoyment.
and then we can give up that concept. Otherwise, it's very difficult. You can do it through Gyan, but it's a long process, a gradual detachment from everything, or through yoga, by stopping the mind functions, citta, vritti, nirodha, but it's very difficult to do. Other process is simply direct everything towards Supreme Lord.
Yeah.